And what I said from Mark chapter 1 was that in this idea of participating in a covenant community, in looking for Jesus, in reality, we're looking at Jesus. That's kind of the message of the Gospel of Mark. In looking at him, we look at him with a view toward emulating him, toward being like him. But I wonder how the people to whom Jesus ministered, how did they recognize him? The lessons take us today to Mark chapter 5. What was it that drew people to Jesus? In Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20, we meet a man who recognized Jesus. And that's the idea that we're getting at from the quarterly, recognizing Jesus. And as just to bring this kind of to wrap it up at the beginning, they recognized Jesus as one who had absolute power. That's what they recognize. Now, as one who's recognized Jesus myself, I read Mark chapter 5 and I see that I don't have to fear. I don't have to fear. From Mark chapter 4, the disciples learn that they didn't have to fear the environment around them. Jesus calmed the storm, and at the end of chapter 4, he says to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" It was right after he had calmed the storm. And then verse 41 says, this is right after Jesus said that, "And they feared exceedingly. And they said to one another, 'Who can this be, that even the wind and the waves obey him?'" It's a different kind of fear there. They weren't afraid at that point anymore about the environment around them. No, now they started to fear him because they were overwhelmed with his power, that even the wind and the waves would obey him. Recognize him as the one who has absolute power. Now we get to chapter 5 and we see that as one who has recognized Jesus, not only do I not have to fear the environment around me, I don't have to fear the evil around me. Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 10. Absolute power always trumps absolute evil. Do you believe that? Absolute power means it is absolutely powerful, even over evil. Evil is very real, very powerful, and very prevalent. Verses 1 through 5, and then they came to the other side of the sea. This is Mark chapter 5, verse 1. To the country of the Gadarenes, Gadaris, as some of yours might say. And when they had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him, and always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones. Kind of interesting here right at the beginning. This guy comes to meet Jesus. I wonder why he did that. Was it the possessed man who came to Jesus, who had some moment of lucidity and he decided to come to Jesus for deliverance? Or was it the demon, or the demons we find later, in the man who was coming to Jesus? Was it the man or was it the demons? I don't know. If it was the demons, did he have some diabolic intentions that he wanted to come to Jesus? Or maybe he came because he couldn't help coming. I think that's probably the case because he was drawn there, even against his will. I read this and I think, you know, even the epitome of evil has to give account before Jesus Christ. My point is simply this. Evil is all around us. Evil is aggressive. Evil doesn't wait for us to go after it. No, evil is aggressive. It comes after us. And evil is something that we have to deal with. Evil comes to us regularly. But not only does evil come to us, evil comes from us because we're evil. You know, evil never comes from Jesus Christ. Never. We read in Mark that it often comes to him two or three times in the book. The demons come to Jesus. He doesn't go after them. They come to him. Joey mentioned the book of Genesis. That's someone take my Bible away and only leave me one book, I would want them to leave me Genesis. I live almost in the book of Genesis. Much to the probably chagrin of the people at Valley, I think I did 6.5 years of the Sunday night study in the book of Genesis. Whoa, that was brutal for them. It was great for me. I loved it. But in Genesis, it's kind of interesting. In the early chapters of Genesis, Eve had to be talked into her sin. You notice that? She had to be tricked a little bit. She had to be talked into it. She didn't want to do it. A chapter later, after people were born with a sin nature, Cain couldn't be talked out of his sin, even by God. That's the power of evil within us. Evil is very real, it's very powerful, it's very prevalent. Verses 6 through 10, but evil is subject to Jesus Christ. And when he saw Jesus from afar, this is the man who was possessed, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice, and he said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." For he said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." And then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And also he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country. Evil. The evil around us. This evil comes right to Jesus in the same way that evil will confront you and I. But so not only do you and I have evil coming to us, we have evil coming from us. But all of that evil is subject to Christ. And the moral of the story that I'm getting to is simply this: because of Jesus Christ, I don't have to fear the evil around me. I don't even have to fear the evil within me. Boy, we do some crazy things out of a fear of evil, don't we? Oh, I can't believe I'm at the point that I can say 20 years ago, and it sounds like not long ago, but I'm there. I've been there for a while. Early in our time in New Jersey, my wife and I, when we moved here, and it wasn't anything to do with New Jersey, it kind of swept the country, there was a big movement toward protecting our kids from evil. And we as believers oftentimes took the path of isolation. getting our kids away from the world, getting them away from all these bad influences. That's still going on. I talked to someone recently who doesn't want to bring their kids to Sunday school because of those bad kids. The path of isolation. I'm going to protect my children by isolating them. Before I was even married, a man who was very, very important in my life and who still is, I remember talking to him. He raised these great kids. And I remember talking to him about this, how did you do that? And he lived before the days of Christian bookstores, before people actually wrote about how to do this stuff. And he said, I don't know how we did that. He said, who knows? So one thing, though, is we never tried to isolate our kids. We tried to insulate our kids. Oh, wow. Notice in the passage that the guy runs up to Jesus, and my text says he worshipped him. It shouldn't say that. He didn't come and say, oh, Lord, you're the greatest. You are, I love you. No, it's the word in Greek for bowing down. And really, that's what it means to worship. It means to bow before. Some of your texts probably more correctly read, the man came and he bowed down to him. But he implores Jesus, interestingly, at the end of that paragraph, he implores Jesus by God. Verse 7 there, I implore you by God that you not torment me. What's the demon doing invoking the name of God as he's speaking to God? Reminds me how easy it is for people to use the name of God. Here is evil incarnate, speaking freely of God, asking something in God's name. Now, what do we do with this whole concept of demonic activity? I'm certainly not going to go through a theology on demonism today, but there's some interesting notes on demonic activity from this passage. Demons seek to destroy those whom they attack. They really do. Look what they did with this guy. They alienated him. When I say they, I'm meaning this host of demons within this guy. They alienated him. He lived all alone. He was such that nobody wanted to be near him. They alienated him. They destroyed him physically. He was running around cutting himself. Now don't confuse what he was doing with the kind of 20, 25-year-old psychological phenomena that we in the United States experience with people cutting themselves. That's unrelated to this. And if you're dealing with someone in your family or someone that you know that's what they call a cutter, look at that as demonic activity. Some sound psychological explanations behind what they're doing. But my point is that these demons were torturing this guy. They were physically destroying him. They brought him to these dark and depressing areas. Oh man, the darkness of demonic oppression must be unbelievable. A friend of mine has a couple of kids. I say had a couple of kids. He still has them, but they're grown up. But it was interesting when his son, who was a great kid, grew up in the home and was going on strongly for Christ. He turned about 17, and he just kind of went off the deep end. Spiritually, morally. And it was like someone pulled a switch and this kid changed. And apart from the kind of sullen and dark attitude, what was so interesting as my friend looks back at it is everything about his son turned dark. He wore dark clothing. He never would open the shades in his room. He took anything bright off the walls. And mom and dad didn't know what to do. They They sought Christian counselors to help. You know, he didn't turn into this nasty, rebellious kid. No, he turned into a quietly rebellious kid. And what was so interesting in the course of what was going on, a nurse of a doctor my friend went to for this kid read an article about the potential impact of some acne medication. And come to find my long story short here, the medication that this fellow was on brought him into this crazy, deep acne medication. Why do I tell you that? Well, because as when they got him off this medication, this kid turned in a matter of months back into who he used to be. But as he tells the story, the kid tells the story, he said that he felt like he was in an underground system looking up at the last manhole. And he said, and every day that the light from that manhole got smaller and smaller and smaller. And because of his fears, he said he had to dress dark, so maybe he could hide from whatever might be there. Crazy account. We thank God for this nurse who happened to read an article in some medical journal. But what's my point? It's this demonic activity just brought this guy to the dark and depressing areas. The guy in the account. We notice here there was exceptional, almost superhuman power. And there was this wild and kind of out of control behavior. We also notice that these demons were accurately aware of the person of God, and they were accurately aware of God's purposes. We also find, as we look at what happened here, is these demons desperately want to inhabit bodies. They were content. They thought they would be content. It went to pigs, because at least it was a body. They also didn't want to be sent away. Where were they afraid to be sent back to? Possibly back to the pit. I wonder if these demons aren't kind of like foreign diplomats who get to, you know, be ambassadors to the United States or to the United Nations and live in New York City. My guess is, you know, I used to think, you know, we were ticked off at some country, so we expel their diplomats, and the diplomats hate to go. I'm thinking, what's the big deal? They don't want to go back to where they came from. They're kind of liking the life of the diplomat. And maybe with these demons, it's the same thing. I don't know. But they're fully subject to the commands and to the purposes of God. Absolute power trumps absolute evil. And because of that truth, the people of God can be so thankful. Take heart. Though you and I are surrounded by unspeakable evil, that evil is ultimately subject to Jesus Christ. Absolute power trumps absolute evil. Second, verses 11 through 20. Only absolute power accomplishes complete deliverance. It's one thing to be powerful over evil that's around us. But absolute power is absolutely power over the evil within us. Verses 11 through 13. True deliverance might be harsh and ugly. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. And so all the demons begged him, saying, "Send us into the swine that we may enter them." And at once Jesus gave them permission. And then the unclean spirits went out and they entered the swine. It's probably about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place and into the sea. And they drowned in the sea. I wonder what that looked like. That's a kind of violent thing to experience, isn't it? Especially if you're the pigs. But even to watch that, can you imagine that? Probably would be a great time to tell you my butchering stories from when I grew up on the farm, but we won't. That's a kind of violent, nasty occurrence. Can you imagine what a pile of 2,000 pigs smashing on rocks and floating in shallow water would look like to the observer? I wonder what my deliverance from sin would look like if it was complete deliverance. I'm sure that some of our individual deliverances would look pretty ugly. But I wonder what some of our corporate deliverances from sin would look like. I wonder if there's corporate sins right here in your assembly and in mine at home. Corporate sins that need to be dealt with. I hope not. But if there are, my guess is that the process of being delivered from the sins we so love, my guess is that that deliverance would be harsh and ugly and violent and sickening. I wonder what it would look like if God decided to clean house. Oh, we would love that, wouldn't we? We would love the result of being clean before God. I'm not talking about salvation. We are clean before God if we know Christ as our Savior. But I'm talking about the process of delivering us from the present influence of sin. My guess is that would look pretty ugly. Kind of like 2,000 pigs smashing on sharp rocks in shallow water. A book was recommended to me recently. I'm always leery of books being recommended to me. Because I'm kind of thinking, you recommend a book to me thinking I need it. Now, if that was, boy, thank you for being a wonderful preacher book, then nobody ever gives me those. Jerry Bridges is one of my favorite authors. He's been around a long time. He's in his 80s now. And he's been writing for many, many years. He's best known for the book, The Pursuit of Holiness, I believe. But good guy, lives in Colorado. His last book is called Respectable Sins. I picked the book up thinking, sounds like a good book. Somebody told me to read it. I don't think I like this person anymore. I did pretty well for the first half of the book. Yeah, these respectable sins. About halfway through the book, when he started to deal with some specific, what he calls sins that are acceptable in the Christian community, I felt like I was in a boxing match, and I was losing. Here are the chapter titles of the sins that he calls respectable sins that he says we ain't going anywhere unless we deal with these. Ungodliness, anxiety and frustration, discontentment, unthankfulness, pride, selfishness, lack of self-control, impatience and irritability, anger, judgmentalism, envy and jealousy, and worldliness. Sins that you and I have grown comfortable with. Sins that you and I don't think we need to be delivered from. You see, as long as I preach against homosexuality and abortion, I'm never dealing with those things. And you can leave here feeling so good, you're not an adulterer or an abortionist or whatever. Then I read Jerry Bridges' book and I say, wow, there's not one of us can leave here comfortable. Not one of us. You see, true deliverance might be really harsh and it might get really ugly. Second, verses 14 through 17, true deliverance, be careful on this one, true deliverance might not be what we really want. So those who fed the swine fled. And they told it in the city and in the country. And then they went out to see what it was that had happened. And then they came to Jesus, and they saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had this legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened. How it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Verse 17, and then they began to plead with Jesus to depart from their region. You know, some of the same people who feared this demoniac, who tried to chain him and wanted to put him away, keep him away from public eye, were even more afraid and even more uncomfortable with the one who had delivered the man. Were they mad about the pigs that their income was gone? Maybe. I don't get that impression as I read it, though. Did they find themselves kind of disconcerted that this local spectacle was now gone? Maybe. I don't know. Had these people grown comfortable with their local display of evil? Yeah. As much as they hated it, as much as they said they feared it, they feared even more the one who delivered him. Judy and I lived in Dallas before we moved there. We were talking the epitome of almost the Bible Belt, right? It's a great place to move away from. Sorry, Cowboy fans, but it was a nice place to live. We lived there in the early 1980s. Shut up, some of you. You weren't even around. That's when cable TV was getting really big. And a lot of the big cable companies that weren't big at the time were buying up the little cable companies. They're making a concerted effort throughout the country to push their product, and they did a good job doing that. But one of the things that they did, I remember reading about, is before they would come into an area, they would do pre-customer surveys to see how much they could expect to make in that area. Should they even target certain areas? Is anybody going to buy cable TV? Now, you and I looked at that and say, who wouldn't? Well, back then, not everybody would. Not everybody thought. We didn't know what it was. Sounds funny, doesn't it? I'm not liking you guys. Anyway, they did a survey in Dallas, and they found out that more people in Dallas than any other city in the country were interested not only in signing up for cable, but in signing up for the adult channels. Bible Belt did a great job, didn't they? That's not the end of the story. 2 years later, their signing up campaign and their adult, or we should say children, For immature audiences only, those channels exceeded their expectations by a factor of about 2 or 3. I hate it when I think of my sin, but I don't want to get rid of it. I hate it, but in my heart of hearts, I kind of like knowing it's there. I'm comfortable with it, even though I'll tell you today that I hate it. True deliverance for God's people might not be something we really want. Finally, in verses 18 through 20, true deliverance should leave us grateful and obedient. And when he got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged Jesus, that he might go with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but he said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you, and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in the Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him. And they all marveled. Verse 18, this guy that was truly delivered wanted to stay with Jesus. And that sounds, do a lot of good, cool preaching stuff on that, but it's kind of cool, isn't it? He was so grateful for what Jesus had done for him, he said, "What do I have here? I want to stay with you." He wanted to stay with Jesus, and verses 19 through 20, he wanted to obey Jesus. Jesus told him, and I think this guy grasped, that he was the product of God's compassion. If you're here today, you know Jesus as your Savior, as I do. We are the product of God's compassion. And the minute we begin to look at ourselves as more than that, we will become spiritually arrogant. We're the product of God's compassion. And then he became a powerful testimony about what Christ can do. The Lord doesn't need to save the captain of the football team to get his message out. No, he's in the business of saving these people who are shunned by the rest of the world. And he's saving them, and then he's using them. He did it then, he does it now. And he uses those people who are saved that we still go to the other side of the street when we see them coming, and who come to our church and we still don't give them much to do because of their backgrounds. And God is saving them, and he's using them, while so many of us have long ago forgotten that we're the product of God's compassion. And therefore, he's overlooking using us. Because unlike somebody like this demoniac, you and I come to the table thinking we have something to offer. Thinking that God was somehow wise in saving us. So what about this deliverance? Have you been delivered from some specific sins? Was it true deliverance, or was it just another brief reformation? I've had a lot of reformations. I haven't had a lot of deliverance. How do we know the difference between a brief reformation and a true deliverance? I think by how ugly the deliverance process was. Absolute power trumps absolute evil. And only absolute power can accomplish complete deliverance. Passage tells me that as a person who has recognized Jesus, I don't have to fear the evil around me, and I don't have to fear the evil within me. But what I do have to fear is going over time, because I did it again. I keep forgetting we have songs at the end. My apologies. Ah! This is good stuff, though, guys. You take this demoniac passage and read it again. There's some really good stuff there. Father, I pray that you would help us to want deliverance, that you would do a work in our lives to encourage us to want to have you rescue us from sin. I pray that for any who may be here who are not believers. I pray that for those of us who are. I'm thankful for me that you have forgiven me all my sins and others here just like me. But I pray now that you would deliver me and that you would deliver my friends who are wrestling with sin as well. That's asking a lot, but we know that we can ask a lot from someone who's absolutely powerful. So I pray, Lord, that we be characterized as people who love you, that you would work in our testimonies, that you would work in our lives. We're so thankful for people, even people here today who love you so very much. And I pray that you would increase that tribe. And Father, for any here who are struggling, I just pray for grace, for more grace and even more grace, that you would not stop working in our lives, that you would get us to the point where you can use us. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.